Justice for Jessica means that it's not over, but in a sense, all the wondering, the what happened, I don't think we'll ever know why, but justice means that she didn't go easy. Justice means she'll be at peace. For me, I think she'll be at peace. I think justice means that this person will get what they deserve, because you can't get away with something like that. And I think getting justice isn't closure for us, because there will never be closure. There's always going to be a hole. There's always going to be a missing piece. But getting justice would help. There'll be justice, and it'll be justice for Jessica. But I still have to live the rest of my life without Jessica. And for me, there's no justice for that.
That was A.J. Prince, sister of Jessica Chambers. I'm your host, Beth Karras, and this is Unspeakable Crime, The Killing of Jessica Chambers. I was a prosecutor in New York City for 8 years before joining Court TV, now called True TV, as a correspondent. For almost 2 decades, I covered trials across the country. I've been following Jessica's case for a long time, and I'm part of Oxygen's television series of the same name. This podcast follows the case as we examine Jessica's death, the search for her killer, and the trial of the accused. In the previous episode, we left off at the beginning of Quentin Tellis' murder trial. He's accused of killing Jessica Chambers. The trial began in October 2017, nearly 3 years after Jessica's murder. A jury would come from outside Panola County and be sequestered for the trial. In opening statements, District Attorney John Champion told jurors what the evidence would show, proof that Quentin Tellis murdered Jessica. The evidence would include Quentin's statements to police, DNA, and cell phone data.
And I firmly believe that once this case is concluded and y'all enter that room to begin deliberating, you will say, well, everything that Mr. Champion told us in opening statement, he has shown you. And I believe that Quentin Tellis is guilty of capital murder beyond a reasonable doubt.
Quentin's defense attorney, Darla Palmer, emphasized to jurors what they considered a huge hole in the state's case, that Jessica named her killer, Eric or Derek, and that Quentin is not the right guy.
Eric is not on trial here today. He should be. And for this reason, we will ask that you find Quentin Tellis not guilty as a result.
As the testimony is set to begin, Jessica's mother, Lisa Chambers, is the first witness, and understandably, she's apprehensive about it.
Raise your right hand. Do you solemnly swear or affirm the testimony you're about to give involving this case is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
Would you state your name for me, please?
Lisa Chambers.
And Ms. Chambers, I'm going to ask you to speak up, speak into the microphone, okay?
Okay.
How are you related to Jessica Lane Chambers?
That's my baby girl.
And how old was Jessica at the time of her death?
19.
Can you describe the person depicted in this photograph?
It's my baby, Jessica Chambers.
Is this Jessica Lane Chambers?
Yes, it is.
Growing up, did Jessica always live around Cortland?
Always.
And did she play some sports when she was growing up?
She played softball a lot, and she was a cheerleader.
Ms. Chambers, I'm going to take you back to December the 6th of 2014. That is a day you will always remember, is that correct?
That's correct.
Who did Jessica live with at that time?
She lived with me.
What did she do when she returned home that day?
She either received a phone call or a text.
Did you know who she was talking to?
I had no idea.
After she got off the phone, what did she do?
She said she was fixing to go get her something to eat and clean out her car, and she'd be back in a little bit.
Was that the last time you saw your daughter?
Yes, it was.
Jessica's mother's testimony may have been brief, but it was powerful. As I sat watching and listening to her, I couldn't imagine the pain she felt. I have to believe that everyone in court shared that feeling. Her testimony not only established who the murder victim was, but helped set the timeline for when Jessica was killed, since her mother was one of the last people to speak to her before the fire. Next on the stand was Jessica's friend Keisha Meyer. She was with Jessica the morning of that fateful day. She, too, helped to reconstruct the timeline of Jessica's last day.
She came and picked me up that morning around 10, and she had Quinn Tellis with her.
What was the purpose of her coming to pick you up?
Just took a ride around and just hanged out a little bit.
Did she take you home first, or did she take Quentin home first?
She took Quinn home first.
Did you have occasion to ever talk to her again?
No. I tried to reach out to her and never got any response.
Initially, Quentin told investigators basically the same story about Jessica's final day, about riding around with her and Keisha in the morning. On the stand, Keisha added that she and Jessica were supposed to meet up later that evening. Cell phone records would show that Jessica had tried to reach Keisha later in the day. Keisha would testify that her cell phone ran out of minutes that afternoon, so they were never able to connect. Defense attorney Darla Palmer cross-examined Jessica's friend.
Miss Keisha, correct?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Now, you have knowledge that Jessica actually was involved with selling drugs to some degree, marijuana.
Yes.
And that would have been pretty often.
Yes.
Would you say she was basically serving people every other day?
Yes.
I turn the witness, Your Honor.
Prosecutors did not bring out that Jessica sold marijuana, and they were probably not happy jurors now knew it. It can be dangerous for the defense to elicit gratuitous bad aspects of a murder victim's character, since it may offend some jurors. But perhaps the defense will suggest the murderer could be someone she sold drugs to. In that case, jurors should know this side of Jessica. Jessica's mother, Lisa, reacts to the testimony about her daughter selling drugs.
I don't believe Keisha on that part. Now, I'm going to say Jessica didn't, but if she did, she was doing it for somebody, for a reason. The child was threatened.
This was not part of the trial or testimony, but according to Jessica's parents, Lisa and Ben, in the week leading up to the murder, Jessica repeatedly talked about being threatened.
She kept telling me, these bitches think I'm snitching, but I'm not. Well, the week it happened, she kept telling me on Monday, she said, these bitches think I'm snitching, but I'm not.
I said, well, Jessica, what have you done? Nothing, Daddy, you know. And then she got what she would tell me, everybody think I'm snitching. Everybody thinks I'm, I said, who? Just everybody, Daddy. Everybody thinks I'm snitching because you work for the police.
While that theory never reached the courtroom, BuzzFeed reporter Katie Baker says it made the rounds online.
There was this theory that Jessica was an informant for the sheriff's department. Some people online came up with some theory that she was wearing a wire and was going to out some big-time gang members, and that's why she was murdered.
There was never any evidence made public to back up those informant theories, and the Panola County Sheriff's Department says there was no evidence of a hit on Jessica either.
I'm Jimmy Anthony. I'm the counselor at the Sheriff's Department. I'm also responsible for the gang intelligence. Jessica Chambers was not the top of my radar list, but she was known to hang out with the Vice Lords. She was moving around in different sets and different organizations, but she never did anything that was distinctive enough to make her stand out. As far as I know, there was not an order to kill her, anything to that effect.
Oxygen presents a groundbreaking original series, Unspeakable Crime, The Killing of Jessica Chambers.
A teenage girl burned alive.
From Oscar-nominated and Emmy Award winner Joe Berlinger comes the riveting limited TV series event.
White people just saying the black people did it, or black people saying white people did it.
A horrific death by fire divides a small town, but is the right man on trial?
Eric is not on trial here today. He should be.
Unspeakable Crime, The Killing of Jessica Chambers. Saturdays at 7, 6 Central, only on Oxygen, the new network for crime.
Next up in the trial was the testimony of a parade of first responders, 17 in all, starting with Cole Haley. He was one of the first to arrive on the scene the night Jessica was found.
But
8:12 p.m., you responded to a car fire.
Yes, sir. When I arrived, I pulled on up to where the car was on fire.
Did you know Jessica Chambers?
I knew her. We weren't, you know, friends or anything, but I knew her.
When you first arrived on the scene, did you recognize this person?
No, sir, I did not.
What was this person wearing?
When I seen her, she had nothing on but her panties. I got out and I got a blanket, and she had her arms out and was coming towards me, saying, "Help me, help me, help me."
Nicole, I want you to describe for this jury, what did she look like? What was the condition of Jessica Chambers?
Her hair was fried out like she had stuck it in a light socket. And she had black all over her face. Her body was severely burned. And I wrapped a blanket around her to conceal her. She reached out for my hand. I held on to her hand. And her mouth, inside her mouth, was just charred black. When I asked her name, she said Jessica Chambers. And she was not recognizable to me. I know what Jessica Chambers looked like. Knowing this is Cortland, I said, "This is Jessica Chambers, not Chambers."
In all your years of being a firefighter, have you ever seen anything like this?
No, sir, and I hope I never see anything like it again.
Cole, let me ask you one final question. As of today, are you currently on the Cortland Fire Department?
Sir, I'm not.
Your Honor, I have no further questions. I would ask that he be finally excused.
Nearly 3 years after that night, Cole Haley was still traumatized. It was hard not to get emotional as I listened to Cole. When he left the stand, he was shaking, in tears. And as he passed Ben Chambers, seated right across from me, Cole hugged Jessica's father and gave him a message.
He said, "I'm so sorry, I couldn't do more. Man, it just tore me apart, you know, how it done destroyed his life. Cole, I mean, it messed that boy up. You know, he needs professional help."
It's been said that many of the first responders were psychically scarred by seeing Jessica burn so severely and barely alive that night, their pain still raw even years later. Here's Eddie Eidson, one of the first responders who didn't testify at the trial.
Felt guilty for not being there. I didn't want to go through it again.
He also discussed Cole Haley and the trauma of that night.
I'd trade spots with that kid any day. He's a good kid. All he ever wanted to do was just be a firefighter and help somebody. It wasn't fair with what happened to Jessica, but then, you know, it all trickles downhill. Everybody affected by it.
I wish that never came at night.
Nightmares. Stressed out all the time. Divorced. I thought I could handle stuff like it, and I slept in my truck for 2 weeks. I sleep with a pistol in my lap. I'm not gonna lie, a couple times it crossed my mind to just go and end it all.
As testimony continued for the first 2 days of the trial, first responders walked jurors through their experience that night. Here's Jody Morris, another volunteer firefighter who was on the scene.
What did you find when you got to the fire?
When we got to the fire, we've seen a passenger-sized car with heavy flames coming out of the passenger area.
What did you see?
I seen a figure look like somebody coming out of the woods. Appeared to be a zombie coming out. I mean, I know that's a little harsh, but that's what it looked like.
Volunteer firefighter Shane Mills on the stand.
Did you know Jessica Chambers?
Yes, sir.
Did you recognize this woman as Jessica Chambers?
At the time, I did not.
Describe for the jury what you saw when you first got there.
A one of the worst things you could imagine. I mean, you can't, I can't picture it for y'all. She was burning, her hair was, you know, beautiful blonde, and you know, you look at it at the time and, you know, her hair's just, it's fried.
Daniel Cole and Will Turner describe Jessica's burns.
There's soot all around her nose and her mouth.
And her arms were out. She was, looked like a zombie. Somebody off The Walking Dead is what I would picture it as. Her body was charred. It was just black skin hanging off of it, burnt skin.
But it was something else first responder Will Turner revealed that raised an eyebrow.
And Will, you also saw somebody there at the scene that concerned you, is that correct?
I did. A middle-aged black male walked up, and I told him, I said, hey man, you can't be here, this is a crime scene, you need to leave. He never said a word to me. He gave me a stare that I've never seen before. He stared straight through me. He was looking towards where the car was at and in the woods the whole time. He turned around, he began walking off and looking over his shoulder back towards the car was at. He had a blue shirt on. And by the time he got out of my sight, he had a white t-shirt on. I told Brandy Davis something just wasn't right about him. He seemed suspicious.
Who was this man? If I was wondering, I'm sure some jurors were too. I wanted to know more so that in my mind I could rule him out or in. On Daniel Cole's cross-examination, Darla Palmer focused on this mystery man.
And they went as far as to give you a tag number of this person that they thought was out there. You received that?
I do remember receiving the tag number. They gave it to the law enforcement. Yes, ma'am.
Now that we know the mystery man's tag number was given to law enforcement, I figured at some point in the trial, we'd find out who he was and how, presumably, he was ruled out as a suspect. Throughout the testimony, one thing was clear. Many first responders said Jessica named her killer.
From what I could hear, it sounded like she said Eric.
I asked her who did this to you, and she said Eric.
First responder Brandy Davis testified that he spoke to Jessica when he arrived.
Okay, and what did you say to her?
I asked her name, and she replied, Jessica. I said, you know, Jessica who? And she said, Chambers. And just, you know, basically in conversation, I said, I'd already been advised that this was pretty much a crime scene from Jody Morris. And I said, baby girl, you know, who done this to you?
Did she respond?
Yes, sir.
And what did she say?
She said, Eric.
Did you do, or did you continue to talk to her?
Sir?
Were you able to keep her talking?
Yes.
Volunteer firefighter Sandra Haley also testified about the Eric Derrick issue.
I said, honey, I bent down. I said, honey, who did this to you? And all I heard was Eric.
You had your ear right to her?
Oh, yeah, honey. I'm trying to find out who did this to her.
Your Honor, tender the witness.
On cross-examination of many of the first responders, defense attorney Darla Palmer focused on not just what the first responders said they heard, but also on their written reports, made immediately afterwards. Here she questions volunteer firefighter Josh Perkins.
Good afternoon, Mr. Perkins.
But you authored this particular report.
Yes, ma'am.
Correct. Okay. If you would start reading right where it says, patient attempted to answer questions.
EMS was able to obtain patient's name and that she was set on fire by another person named, quote, Eric, unquote, multiple times.
Hey there, I'm John.
And I'm Darren.
And this is Martinis and Murder,
a weekly podcast that rehashes crimes, investigates new information, and ponders theories you may have never even considered. And we do it all while drinking.
Because frankly, that's how most things in life should be done, right?
Of course.
From murders you've seen on the news to remote crimes in areas of the world you've never even heard of,
we're the place for mysterious murders and creepy crimes.
So hit that subscribe button to make sure you get new episodes downloaded every week.
Sit back, relax, and get ready for
Martinis and Murder.
Ooh, this is good, Matt.
As I listened to these first responders, all of whom appeared credible and sincere, I wondered why in the world did Jessica say Eric or Derek? I wish they had asked her some additional yes-no questions so she wouldn't have to speak. She was in such pain. I wanted to know, did she know him? Was it one person, two people? Was there a fight? Was he from Cortland, Panola County? Were drugs involved? There are many Erics and Dereks in and around Panola County. Quentin's sister LaQuenta even has an ex-boyfriend named Eric, whose name she had tattooed on her hand. That tattoo was noticed by many viewers of the Oxygen TV series, who questioned whether there was a connection. Investigators insist they looked into every Eric and Derek around, including Quentin's sister's ex-boyfriend, but none of those leads panned out. And back at the courthouse, after the litany of witnesses who heard Jessica apparently name her killer, for Quentin's sister Shanika, this case against her brother was open and shut.
Everybody get on the stage, they say, Eric. I don't understand it, because if somebody hurt me before I die, I'm going to let them know who it is. And Quentin and Eric do not sound alike.
Next on the stand was a series of medical personnel who examined Jessica at the hospital when she arrived that night. Though she was still alive, by then Jessica was non-responsive and literally clinging to life. Mary Beth Hall was the nurse tending to Jessica.
And Mary Beth, tell the jury please what you observed when Jessica arrived at the burn unit.
We took the towels off, assessed her, know that she had burns. Face, neck, chest, back, arms, legs. So a large area burn.
Dr. William Hickerson is the medical director at the Burn Center in Memphis where Jessica was airlifted.
Photographs that I received were those that looked like a lady that had somewhere in the neighborhood of a 95% total body surface area burn. And the majority of those were deep dermal to third degree.
And would you describe for the jury what you mean by third degree?
A first degree burn is a sunburn. It's basically that most people have experienced sometime in their life. A third degree burn goes all the way through the skin, and there's no chance of survival or regeneration of the top layer of the skin in that case.
Dr. Hickerson also testified that Jessica was probably seated when she was burned, and that her severe burns and the soot in her airways indicated she had been in a closed space. Dr. Hickerson was asked about what burn victims like Jessica experience.
Those that can live go through several phases of that psychological reaction. Number one is, will I live? Will I live with all my body parts? Will I live being able to function? Things along those lines. But from this standpoint, initially it's, I'm gonna die.
We had one of the first responders refer to her as a zombie. Would that be consistent with the injuries that you found to Jessica Chambers?
Yes, sir. That skin is now like leather. And so you can't move it like you normally would. The facial expressions are gone. She's not able to make any facial expressions because that skin is tight.
Given the injuries to her lips and her mouth, is it likely that she would have severe difficulties in her speech?
Without a doubt.
Your Honor, I tender the witness.
On cross-examination, Darla Palmer focused on Jessica's alertness and ability to speak at the time first responders were asking her who did this.
Would you agree that for the most part, her condition would have worsened from when she was initially found to when she got to the burn center?
To a certain extent, yes, ma'am.
If there were at least 10 to 12 other individuals who were speaking to her, that would indicate that she could speak, correct?
She could probably speak, but not enunciate well.
And so you cannot say with 100% certainty that statements that she made were not made.
I wasn't there.
Yes, sir. I tend the witness.
The prosecution is confronting the Eric-Derek issue, a huge hurdle for the state, by arguing that perhaps Jessica wasn't really enunciating properly because of the heat injury to her larynx, vocal cords, and tongue. Maybe she couldn't really make certain sounds, and those on the scene thought she was saying Eric, but perhaps she was saying something else. I contacted speech-language pathologist Joanne Lasker, who teaches at Emerson College in Boston, Massachusetts. She did not treat Jessica, but I wanted her to explain how to evaluate a person's speech, not only when there are severe injuries, but also when there are cognitive issues related to trauma.
We would typically ask more than one or two questions in a situation where we had access to the patient for a longer period of time, we would ask questions that are yes and no questions. We would ask the patient to follow commands, and we would try to determine cognition and status from those kinds of questions. The fact that she was asked a question, provided a response, and that she did that repeatedly is interesting and suggests that she did perhaps understand the question that she was being asked because she gave a consistent response. I do want to say it's also possible that she was producing a response that might be what we would call perseverative, in that she couldn't really say anything other than that. However, the fact that she was then asked her name and she provided her name within moments of the first set of questions, and if she gave an appropriate response to that question about her name, suggests to me that in that moment, she was, perhaps, understanding the question she was being asked originally, who did this to you? I can't comment much beyond that because that is not sufficient to come up with a conclusion. Typically, what we would do is we would say, answer yes and no questions that are opposite. For example, is your name Sally? And the answer might be yes or no. Is your name Jessica? And the answer might be yes or no. We would basically determine through a series of those questions whether someone is truly understanding the question that they're being asked.
In the yes-no questions, would you require an audible response or could it be a nod or shake of the head?
That's a great question. In fact, we often rely on nonverbal forms of response. So it doesn't have to be a verbal yes or no. We establish a system of having the patient communicate yes or no with a thumbs up or a thumbs down, whatever part of the body that they're able to move volitionally and reliably, we'll use that as our yes and no indicator.
I'm curious about what parts of our mouth and tongue and lips we use for sounds, because so many of these first responders thought they heard the word Eric, maybe Derek, and I mean, can you talk about what, you know, how we use our mouths and tongues and palate?
Sure, sure. So it's a very complex thing that we do to produce speech. Uses a lot of different muscles, and it's interesting to see how it really functions. You can sort of get an idea of this if you think about the sounds p, as in p, p, and then the sound t, which is like a T sound, and k, made in the back of your throat. All of those sounds actually are made with different parts of our anatomy. So they're using a similar kind of blowing force, but with the p sound. And if you do that, as I'm talking to you, you'll notice your lips are being used. If you say the t sound, your tongue is going behind your teeth for that one. And if you say the k sound, for example, that's being made near the back of your throat with your palate, back of your throat, and the combination of the tongue and palate. So what I'm trying to get at here is that a sound has a variety of articulators involved in its creation, and a word like, for example, Eric, is made within the oral cavity, or the mouth, that's what we call the mouth, the oral cavity, with the tongue and shaping the tongue in various ways, as well as the rest of the vocal tract sort of inside your throat. So that's how Eric is made in terms of production. Also, you'll notice that the Eric sound, that k sound, comes at the end of that word as well.
And you really don't need your lips to say Eric.
That is absolutely true. For producing the word Eric, you don't need to close your lips together. Now, you do need to shape elements of your oral cavity, and that's inside the mouth and throat mechanism, but not the outer part to say that particular word.
Next on the stand, medical examiner Aaron Barnhart, who described Jessica's burns, the toxicology results, and the critical opinions all medical examiners render in a murder case, the cause and manner of death.
Dr. Barnhart, did you in fact perform an autopsy on the body of Jessica Chambers?
Yes. The cause of death was soot and smoke inhalation and thermal injuries.
And how about the manner of death?
Homicide.
Defense Attorney Darla Palmer on cross.
Good afternoon, Dr. Barnhart.
Your report reveals that there was no evidence of any blunt force injuries as well.
I did not find any evidence of that, no.
And then the toxicology revealed that there was a presence of marijuana to some degree.
Yes.
But there was something else we learned from the medical examiner that was interesting. The prosecution's theory was that Quinton wanted sex from Jessica that day, but she was refusing him. Prosecutors seemed to imply that Quinton sexually assaulted her, or at least was struggling with her to have sex, and somehow incapacitated Jessica, thinking he killed her. But when the ME testified, she offered no evidence Jessica was sexually assaulted before she was set on fire. Here's Dr. Barnhart on direct with Assistant DA Jay Hale.
And in the second paragraph, second line, you noted the external genitalia are those of a normal adult female and are atraumatic. Is that correct?
Correct.
So you did not deserve any trauma to that region of Jessica Chambers?
No, I did not.
There was no mention, however, of a rape kit or any internal examination, which one would expect with the assertions prosecutors made about Quinton wanting sex. Assistant DA Jay Hill was later asked about this lack of evidence.
It was certainly an oversight. No, I will say that. It was asked for and never received. So.
Next up was FBI Special Agent Dustin Blunt. He spoke to Quinton 11 days after Jessica died. This was the second of five separate times Quinton spoke to the police about Jessica. As in all the other times, he spoke voluntarily about Jessica and their friendship. At trial, Special Agent Blunt testified about the conversation. But first, prosecutors took a moment to attempt to connect Quinton Tellis to the fire that caused Jessica's death.
This is a photograph of Mr. Tellis' residence.
And what is that in front of the residence?
A shed.
Did you go inside the shed?
We stepped in the shed. We asked him about a gasoline container. He said that that is his 5-gallon gasoline container that he uses for gas, that it was his gas container.
Did you ask him about his relationship or how he had met Jessica?
Yes. They struck up a friendship fairly quickly to the point where they would ride around a lot together numerous times. And he even went as far as to say that they at one time had a sexual relationship.
Where was that?
He pointed behind him to his side yard, which would have been just south of his residence. He stated they were in a vehicle. I believe it was her vehicle. He went into detail to say that the passenger seat was reclined back, and he was sitting in the passenger seat, and Jessica Chambers was on top of him.
And did he indicate whether this was the only time they ever had sex?
He stated to me that he had only had sex with her one time.
Did he tell you what he did a few days after Jessica died?
One of the things he told me is that he erased all communications that he had had with Jessica from his cell phone, text, and phone contacts.
Defense Attorney Alton Peterson cross-examined Special Agent Blunt.
Now, he indicated to you that he had deleted all of the texts from his phone, correct?
Yes.
And did you ask him why he did that?
I did not ask him.
Would you want to know the reason why he did that?
Obviously not.
Okay. Well, I'm asking. Why did you not ask that question?
I just failed to ask the question.
This was a missed opportunity for Special Agent Blunt. I had the opportunity to speak with Quinton in a phone call while he was at Parchman, a Mississippi state prison. During that call, I asked Quinton about this. Quinton, why did you erase all your texts and communications with Jessica right after she died?
I wasn't scared, but we found out that who it was that died. I just deleted the contact with her because I didn't want to have a deceased person information in my phone with a number in my phone if it's going to be no longer used.
Jessica's family doesn't buy it. Her father, Ben, and sister, AJ.
2 days after
he erased her out of his life.
Every single thing is still in my phone.
I don't have heart.
And they could say it's because she's significant to me, and she absolutely is. But I believe if I was riding around with somebody the morning of, the evening of, I was texting them every single day for 2 weeks straight, I had sex with this person, I believe wholeheartedly that person would be significant to me. Absolutely.
On the next episode of Unspeakable Crime, The Killing of Jessica Chambers, Quentin is confronted with physical evidence investigators say link him to Jessica's murder, his DNA on Jessica's keys.
Your DNA is on the keys. I don't know why.
But is the DNA evidence really a match to Quentin Tellis? We'll have testimony and our own expert to explain. Unspeakable Crime, The Killing of Jessica Chambers is produced by Wilshire Studios for Oxygen Media. I'm your host, Beth Karras. From Oxygen, the new network for crime, comes an original television series about the horrific story of a teenage former cheerleader burned alive in rural Mississippi and the man accused of the crime. Who is Jessica Chambers, and why would anyone want her dead? Is the right man on trial, or is he the fall guy? With more questions than answers, this is the case that captured national headlines, took over social media, and left this small town shattered. With exclusive interviews, explosive discoveries, and an unforgettable trial, this is a must-see TV event. Unspeakable Crime, The Killing of Jessica Chambers, Saturday at 7, only on Oxygen.